Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Abdel Basset al-Magrahi, the only person convicted in the 1988 Lockerbie bombing, which killed 270 people, including 189 Americans, died yesterday in Libya at the age of 60. His death comes nearly 3 years after Scotland released him from prison on humanitarian grounds and 11 years after being convicted of planting that bomb on Pan Am Flight 103 in December of 1988. It is an ending to one life at the center of this act of terrorism that changed the world back in the 1980s, but it does not end a mystery, even though al-Magrahi and his presumed patron, Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi, are both in their graves. John Aston joins us from the BBC studios in Brighton. He's the author of Magrahi, You Are My Jury. John, welcome to the program.
Good morning, John.
What is the mystery that remains here? The conviction of Abdel Basset al-Magrahi was a relief to the victims of the Lockerbie bombing, but legalistically, it didn't resolve anything.
Well, just to be clear, my view is that he was not involved in this. He's always protested his innocence. I've looked at the case in great detail, including a lot of evidence that was not available to the trial court, that was withheld from the trial court, and I'm convinced he's innocent. That leaves a big question: who did it? And we know roughly who did it. It was an Iranian-sponsored act that was carried out by Palestinian proxies who were acting purely on a contract basis, not in the name of the Palestinian cause. But the trail there went cold something like 18 months after the bombing. And unfortunately, the precise individuals involved, we don't know. And the precise mechanism for conducting the bombing, we don't know. So there's a lot of mysteries that I'm afraid will probably never be answered 24 years on.
Remind us, John Aston, of the spectacle that accompanied his release, both in terms of protests around the world and his reception in Libya when he returned.
Yeah, well, he was released 3 years ago on compassionate grounds. He was terminally ill with cancer. The Scottish government found itself under enormous pressure from the Libyan government and from the UK government to release him. The UK government had signed a prisoner transfer agreement behind the back of the Scottish government and was hoping to get him home by that in order to, of course, open up Libyan oil wells to British companies. There were the business interests overrode justice in this case. But the Scottish government released him through another mechanism, which was compassionate release, which was open to them because he was suffering terminal cancer. There was an enormous furore, of course, because most people, and of course most people hadn't looked in detail at the evidence, believed him to be guilty. He was received in Libya, according to our press, with a hero's welcome. But actually, if you read the WikiLeaks cables, the Iranian government kept something like 2,000 or 3,000 people away from those celebrations, and only about 200 people actually turned up. And the international press corps was kept on a bus. So the actual picture was rather different to the one that was presented there.
We're talking with the author of Magrahi, You Are My Jury. John Aston is the author. He joins us from the BBC studio in Brighton. And as we mentioned, 189 Americans were killed in the Lockerbie bombing when the Pan Am Flight 103 exploded landed in Scotland, the debris of which landed in Scotland, which is why the Scottish authorities are involved here. And among those Americans, loved ones of those victims, is Eileen Monetti. Her son, Rick, was a 20-year-old junior at Syracuse University, was on that flight. We asked her yesterday what her reaction was that Magrahi had died.
You know, it's similar to the reaction I had when Gaddafi was killed, and that's simply that it rids the world of one person who we believe has done evil. But at the same token, it doesn't bring my son back.
The death of Magrahi does not bring Eileen Monetti's son back. So, there's been a lot of outrage over the treatment of Magrahi and the release among these victims. Does it keep alive this mystery and the legal issues which you say remain open?
Yes, it does. And it's sad that it should take the pain and suffering of the victims to keep the case open. However, I believe had his case come to the Court of Appeal, he would have been freed. I think he would have been acquitted. The conviction would have been overturned. And just to tell your listeners, when he was convicted, there was a United Nations trial observer who declared the guilty verdict to be incomprehensible. And from then on, he campaigned on Megrahi's behalf. And Megrahi had an appeal pending when he went home, or he abandoned the appeal shortly before he went home. And his case had been referred back to the appeal court on no fewer than six grounds by the Scottish Criminal Cases Review Commission, which is a statutory body charged with investigating miscarriages of justice, which has the power to refer cases back to the appeal court. Now, unfortunately, that evidence wasn't heard, but we put it in the book. When Megrahi went home, he said, "I can't have my day in court. I want the public to be my jury." So the book is called Megrahi, You Are My Jury. And it presents all the evidence, both for and against, the important evidence, much of which was denied to that trial court. Now, the big question, or one of the big questions, one of the big mysteries in this case, is why on earth did the prosecution service in Scotland, the Crown Office, withhold all this evidence?
Well, it's interesting how much of the evidence that was presented remains with the victims. Here's Eileen Monetti one more time.
I don't understand why people, especially people who did not follow the trial, can consistently say that he was not guilty. He was a member of the Libyan secret intelligence. He did have the dual passports. He wasn't in Libya on the 21st, as he claimed, and he had ample ways to get the suitcase with the bomb on the plane.
One can't argue with Eileen Monetti's emotional connection to this case, but there she is making the circumstantial case that you describe in your book. Give us a final thought.
Well, the circumstantial case actually falls apart under scrutiny. Yes, he had two passports, but he handed them in when he kept them for years and years and then handed them in to the authorities when he stood for trial. And yes, he was in Malta, but he could have gone to Malta undercover without actually having any passport at all, but he didn't, and he was quite open about this travelling there. And as for being an intelligence agent, well, the man who said that he was a senior intelligence agent turned out to be a CIA informant. Moreover, he was such a fantasist and such a hopeless informant that they were considered sacking him. He also said, by the way, that Colonel Gaddafi was a Freemason. Now, I don't know if you're a Freemason, but if you are, I don't think they'd allow Gaddafi into your lodge.
Another kind of curveball sourcing there in the Lockerbie bombing. John Ashton, Megrahi's biographer and author of Megrahi, You Are My Jury, on the death of Abdel Basset El-Megrahi. Thank you, John.
Thank you.